Windy City Queer Cast.
Gays and lesbians are all the rage.
We're here and we're queer.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
We're talking mega gay.
Ooh, I like that.
I'm Mitchell Fain.
I'm Amy Matheny.
This program is brought to you in part by American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow.
Superstars. She rolled my hair, put my lipstick on in a glass of her boudoir. There's nothing wrong with loving who you are, she said, 'cause he made you perfect, babe. So hold your head up, girl, and you'll go far.
And you're listening to Windy City Queer Cast, show number 404. I'm Amy Matheny.
And this is Mitchell Fain.
That's right. And you and I are not on the couch today.
We are not on the couch.
No.
We're Skyping.
We are Skyping because, well, you are in Chicago and I am still in New Mexico. And you have been in Kentucky. So
yes, I've been in Louisville.
Louisville.
There's lots of debate about how to pronounce the name of that town.
Well, it's Louisville, because anywhere that's got a vol, which is a lot of places, especially in Tennessee, we've got like a Nashville, Knoxville, Shebville.
Yeah, you know, exactly. It's Louisville.
Louisville. So we've both been away and haven't really even chatted much in the past month, which is bizarre for you and me. And
I have not seen your face since before New Year's Day.
Isn't that crazy?
Crazy.
It's crazy. So Happy New Year, Mitchell Fain.
Happy New Year to you too. That's hilarious.
Happy fucking New Year and happy Valentine's Day. Belated.
Thank you. Yes, you too.
Now I have you to tell too. You that, you know, Valentine's Day this year I'm away from Kelly, but I have to say congratulations to Kelly, because on Valentine's Kelly celebrated 1 year smoke free. So I am so proud of her. Yeah.
Well, this past Sunday was 3 months for me.
Good. The first 90 days, that's hard.
Yeah, I have not smoked in just over 3 months.
Do you feel better?
No, I don't. I mean, yes, I do, because the knowledge that I'm not smoking, I know that that's good, and I know that that's good, but it's funny, you know, I quit, and my voice was super tired, despite the fact that I had quit, and it's so terrible. It's so terrible, a drug that did the withdrawal from it is so terrible that I was cranky and it's not fun to quit. I mean, now I'm sort of over that part, the physical sort of addiction of it, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I don't crave it. It's more of a psychological craving, you know? And, it's still hard. I do feel better. I do.
It's a habitual thing though, right? I mean, it is like a security blanket. That's what it was for me when I stopped smoking.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's been a long time. Actually, I think March now will be like 5 years for me. So I think actually at 5 year mark, I don't know, something else extraordinary happens to your rejuvenation. You know, it's like after a month, this happens. After 6 months and a year, this happens. They always tell you how much time you've added to your life and when your lungs are pinkening up again. And
Yeah, exactly. All those things. I know there's a website where you can sort of look and see all the things that are happening to you as it's doing it. It's interesting, too, because it's hard to explain to people who never smoked why something so disgusting would be so enjoyable, but it is. And so it's difficult to sort of, you know, you say to somebody, oh, I quit smoking, or, oh, I'm a little tense because I, you know, quit smoking, and they're like, oh, God, should have quit years ago. I'm like, I know.
Yeah.
Douchebag. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I know.
It's you a know, really, so it's, really, they say it's harder to stop that than stop smoking crack. I mean, it's supposed to be really, really hard to stop smoking a cigarette.
Yeah,
or maybe not crack, but heroin. It's supposed to be easier than heroin or cocaine or any of those drugs.
Yeah, it's hard because it's also social. Yeah. It's also illegal. It's also like, you know, if you're at a party and you're feeling insecure, or, you know, you can sort of go and stand in the corner or step outside and be by yourself and have a cigarette. And nobody's like, what's up, loser, standing by yourself? Because you're like, I'm having a cigarette. I'm cool.
Yep.
It's fine. And so there's all sorts of things. Or even just a simple one, like the after a meal cigarette, you know?
Mm.
Like, you know, it's like, oh, I just had a great meal, and what I want now is a cigarette.
Mm-hmm.
So it's getting better, and it was great to be in Louisville because nobody in my cast smoked.
Oh, that's
so
good.
There wasn't any temptation. Although I'm in a cast, you know, I just started. Last week I started rehearsals for, like, I literally closed the Second City show in Louisville last Sunday, flew back on Monday. I'm talking about, you know, a week ago. Flew back on Monday and then went to rehearsal that night for a new play.
Wow.
I think it's going to be great. And it's more difficult than it seems. Remember the play This, right? You read it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's difficult. Anyway, great, but difficult. But there's a guy that I really like who I want to, like, hang out with and get to know. Not in a sexual way, like in a friend, cool actor way.
Yep.
And he smokes. So, like, wow. If I was still smoking, I'd go outside and have cigarettes with him and we could, you know.
Yeah. Well,
but I'm not doing it.
I'm here in New Mexico and I'm having time to do all kinds of various and sundry things. And one of the things that I do is I'm either reading late at night or I am watching television. And I haven't been watching as much television. I've been watching a lot. I brought a lot of movies out here that I wanted to watch. And this weekend, I spent the day on Saturday watching Gone with the Wind, the entire thing.
Yeah.
Where it had, you know, thank God for Turner Classic Movies, because as we're counting down to the Oscars, you know, they have Oscar-winning films, like, back to back.
Don't even talk to me about 31 Days of Oscars. It's my favorite thing on the planet.
Awesome. It's awesome.
I don't know how I lived. We had very basic cable in Louisville, and no, which means no Turner Classic Movies, which means I never turned on my television.
Oh.
I literally only turn on my TV to watch Turner Classic Movies.
Yeah. Well, I was watching that. I have basic. I don't know what I have. I have cable. I don't have any premium channels like HBO
right.
or Showtime or whatever. But I also don't have my TiVo, which I have been a TiVo, avid TiVo user for a decade, for 10 years.
Since day one, yeah.
Yeah, and so you're watching crap in real time and you realize, and I'm, you know, what do I got to do? So I watched Gone with the Wind, and then the same day, I watched on the History Channel about Prince William becoming, you know, getting married, a whole profile on him that was very, very long. And then, as only she could have, and I mean, look, they Spike Lee, like, did a documentary of the Katrina flood that only took 2 hours. But I watched the Celine Dion World Tour 3.5-hour documentary.
Oh my God. Now, you know, I love Celine, but I'd have to kill myself at that point.
Oh, it was so good.
Brilliant.
So in the midst of all of that, besides getting up and making myself a little snack, which is what I guess I used to do, it's probably why I weighed more when I watch commercials, because you get up to make food is what I do. Or go, you know, pour a glass of wine or something. I don't know. But I was watching commercials. They literally have this commercial. This all does tie back to your smoking and smoking in general. There was this commercial, and I kind of couldn't believe my eyes because it looked like a Saturday Night Live commercial, almost just in its aesthetics. but it had these different people sitting in like this black screen, you know, floating space. And they're really kind of made up, almost like circa 1992. I mean, I can't even tell you why. Like, just the eye color's wrong, the lip shade's a little too much, the blush is a little too much, and the guy's just a little too Coolio for, like, an Arsenio Hall or, I don't know, you know, music video or something. I don't know. But, and they're smoking these things called Blue Tips. Have you heard of them? And they are a new, they're a new fake cigarette that you inhale and smoke comes out, but you're actually, it's like, I don't know if it's like liquid oxygen or it's something.
Like it's vapor. Yeah.
It's a vapor, but it's not nicotine. And it's so funny because even the ad is petulant in a way that it would be if Saturday Night Live was doing it, because it says things like, this is legal. You can do this in a restaurant. And it's so funny.
That's funny.
Like, are you kidding me? So see, Mitchell, you could go get you a Blue Tip and then you can have one after your meal, and you could go out and talk to your guy that you want to become buddies.
True, you're right. I mean, the thing is, people keep asking me, like, how are you doing it, you know? Mm-hmm. What method are you using? And you know what method I'm using? I'm just not smoking.
Yeah.
I'm just not smoking right now.
Yeah.
And so, I you know, I'm doing it sort of like, you know, in sort of a 12-steppy way in which I'm not announcing that I'm a non-smoker. I'm simply saying that I'm a smoker who's not smoking right now.
Yeah.
Because it's less pressure for me.
Yep. You can do it a day at a time. You can do it like that. Like, you can just
I can do it like a craving at a time, you know?
Yep.
Because that's the thing. The thing with cigarettes is that a craving comes up, you know, mm-hmm. pretty regularly. I mean, it doesn't so much anymore after 3 months, but it comes up pretty regularly, you know?
Yeah.
Every hour or so, maybe a little bit more, depending on what you're doing.
Yep.
And the thing that you just have to learn, that I have to learn, not anyone else, is that that craving will pass.
Yep.
No matter if I have a cigarette or not, the craving will pass.
Yep. I drank a lot of water. I had one of those sports water bottles just because it felt different to drink out of a sports water bottle than it did mm-hmm. a regular water bottle that you twist the lid off of. And mm-hmm. I just kept it next to me at all times. And I drank water whenever, ever I wanted a cigarette, because you talk about wanting a cigarette after a meal. And by the time I stopped smoking, I remember being at the restaurant that I think I owned, or maybe, no, I didn't own it. I was away from the restaurant by that time. But at the end of my smoking, I would literally like have appetizer and be so excited to leave the dining hall and go to the bar and smoke a cigarette, eat my main mm-hmm. course, get up after that, go to the bar, smoke a cigarette. And then I would decide to have my dessert and coffee at the bar so I could smoke while I was having dessert and coffee. So, you know, I was definitely three cigarettes in a meal for sure, and probably one before the meal came while I was waiting. So, you know, it was a five cigarette meal along with my meal kind of smoker. And every course I got a reward. So
I've always liked that sort of like smoking in between courses thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's always been my thing, but I'm doing well.
Yeah.
I'm exhausted because I haven't really had a break. I've had one day off since I've been back from Louisville. One day off that was filled with, you know, errands and stuff. And Megan sang that night, so I went out, and it's just crazy. And I don't have another. I have a day off in a couple of days from now on Thursday, and
yeah,
I my brain is fried. Like, I thought it would be a great idea or exciting and sort of glamorous to go from show to show, because you know I closed Santaland on the 31st,
right.
Had been rehearsing Second City.
Right.
Left for Louisville on the 1st, so right. No break. Boom, did that show. Been working on my lines for this, the play this,
yep.
In Louisville. Came home, started rehearsals. Like, and I'm doing it again because at the end of this round of this, I finish on a Friday and I leave on a Saturday to go to Hawaii for 4 months.
Yep. Nobody's going to feel sorry for you going to Hawaii for 4 months. I just want to know.
I know. It's not that. It's just the break in my brain.
Yeah. Well, and you and I both, I mean, Chicago got kind of a cosmic break, although I know many people don't look at it that way at all. It's actually not a break, but time stood still with the blizzard, which you and I both missed. Were you in the blizzard of 99? Were you in Chicago?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I was too.
Big time. I actually loved it.
I did too.
I grew up in New England, so...
I grew up in New England, so,
you know, we get blizzards a lot.
Yep.
You know, so I grew up, you know, I remember in 1978, we got a blizzard that was so huge, and my street was a dead-end street that was around a corner that only had houses on one side of the street because the other side was a creek. And they didn't realize it, but the plows plowed the end of our street, all the snow. So there ended up being a 10-foot wall of snow.
Oh, my God.
At the end, so we couldn't, nobody on my street could get out.
No.
So we had to create, it was brilliant. We, you know, all the kids had to, like, climb over with our sleds and, you know, go get stuff at the store. Like, it became, like, the kids' responsibility because, you know, the old people weren't going to.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. It was hilarious. So, you know. I have New England stock in me.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I know that this week, and it may have already started, folks, that they are fining people if your sidewalks are not shoveled. I know that ours are because I talked to Kelly. But you know, I know the snow is starting to melt slowly as it's
slowly
getting a little bit warmer. So just know that they're... You know, the city doesn't have to plow every street, but you have to shovel your sidewalks. So there you
go.
Yes,
you do.
That's how fair it all is.
Here's the other part of it that's actually fair, too, is that if you shovel your sidewalk, which you have to do, but you do it badly, like say you don't do the greatest job, they can't fine you for that.
Yeah.
Like they can't judge you on how well you've done it.
Yeah, right. That's exactly right. It's hard work. It is hard freaking work to shovel. I have to tell you because I have been the shoveler and snowblower of our home. And my poor girlfriend like called me and just said, I have to tell you, thank you for the 4 or 5 years you have done this because it is the hardest freaking thing I have ever done. And, you know, sometimes you have to go away for people to understand your value.
I know it's true. Trust me, I appreciate it because the couple of times I've had to shovel in the past couple of years, I have like a, you know, I have a wonky lower back anyway because A, I'm old, and B, I did circus for years and shouldn't have.
Yeah.
So my back is a little bit messed up. So bending over to shovel is like, it's literally like the perfect storm of the worst back pain ever.
Yep.
So trust me, I appreciate all your hard work.
Yep. Yep. Well, Miss Kelly was doing it this trip. I'm like, yeah, it's good. I kind of know the code, which is as soon as it starts to fall, start sweeping it and putting salt down. And then you can just let it build up and build up and build up. And then you go out and then you blow it and then it's easier. But
I like to go out and blow it. I let you do the snow. I'll just go out and blow it.
All right. Well, then.
What?
I'll teach you how to blow. What? I'll teach you how to blow, Mitchell, because, you know, I mastered it and then I moved on. That's what I've always told the straight people who ask me about being a lesbian. I say, I mastered it. I moved on. So,
I know. I said that to somebody asked me recently if I'd ever slept with a woman, you know.
Uh-huh.
How did we get here? But anyway. Somebody asked me recently if I'd ever slept with a woman. Somebody I met in Louisville. And I said, yes, several women. And they're like, oh, you know, like. This was a gay guy who had never slept with a woman, and you know, he sort of said and made that stereotypical face.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, "Well, how was it?" I was like, "It was super fun. I mean, what else would it be? It was super duper fun." And then, you know, I sort of admitted to myself or realized or whatever that process is that you know there was other things that I preferred, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is why it's called preference or orientation or whatever. But yeah, did it and moved on. It was fantastic.
Yep. Yep. It's exactly right. Well, we are going to move on to some news right now and tell you what's going on locally. Elections upon us and, everything else, what's going on internationally and also in entertainment, and what's going on in the theater scene. Mitchell's a part of the biz going on there right now. A lot of great shows. And then we'll be back. Mitchell Fain with us this whole show.
Hi there. I'm a Miller Lite Brewmaster.
And I'm a Miller Lite Drinkmaster.
It's the Brewmaster Drinkmaster Show.
You know, most people know that Miller Lite tastes great, but up until now, only brewmasters like me knew why.
Well, most people know that my friends and I are the most dominating presence in the Kalamazoo Western Division Level 3 Softball League, but very few know why.
Huh. You see, we add the hops first for flavor, second for balance, and a third time to lock in the great Pilsner taste by enhancing the foamy head.
Yeah, well, we don't need fancy softball strategery to win.
We call it the triple hops brewing process.
Well, we call it heart, Mr. Man.
We're on the same team here. I thought you would appreciate this new information.
I apologize. I just wish I had something as important to share.
Well, buy a six-pack of Miller Lite, and you will.
Miller Lite brewmasters have to know the ins and outs of triple hops brewing. The only thing you have to do is enjoy the great-tasting light beer. Miller Lite. Great taste, less filling. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Live responsibly.
I'm Kirk Williamson.
I'm Amy Matheny.
And this is the Week in News. In South Dakota, authorities have refused to grant the name change request for a Sioux Falls lesbian couple who were legally married in Iowa. Amy Mustad married Ashley Stabe last year, adopting Stabe's surname in the process. However, 5 years ago, South Dakota's voters passed a constitutional amendment banning and denying recognition of same-sex marriage and civil unions. The Stabes have filed petitions to change their names.
In Florida, former U.S. Representative Mark Foley has returned to the political arena, making a recent appearance to mentor young Republicans. Foley resigned from Congress in 2006 after it was revealed he had an inappropriate contact with underage male pages.
Florida's Ryan White Care Act AIDS Drug Assistance Program will soon drop 6,500 residents from its rolls. It's an unparalleled move that raises serious concerns about the solvency of the state's safety net for low-income people living with HIV and AIDS.
The Los Angeles County Museum of Art and the J. Paul Getty Trust have jointly acquired a huge collection of the prints, negatives, and letters of the late gay artist Robert Mapplethorpe. It is the first time the two institutions have collected works of art to share. The Robert Mapplethorpe Foundation is donating the majority of the 2,000-plus photographs, and the Trust and the museum, with the help from the David Geffen Foundation, are buying the rest. The entire collection is valued at more than $30 million.
Service Members Legal Defense Network has asked United States Secretary of Defense Robert Gates and Undersecretary of Defense for Personnel and Readiness Dr. Clifford Stanley to establish special boards that would address issues faced by former service members discharged under Don't Ask, Don't Tell and the prior regulatory ban. The majority of former service members want to change their discharge paperwork to remove the remnants of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, which can subject them to discrimination in civilian life.
The popular African-American publication Ebony is featuring a lesbian couple in its current Black Love issue. Yannette Freeman and Willa Walker discussed meeting through mutual friends in 1998 and eventually becoming a couple.
Terry Jones, the Florida minister who made waves by threatening to burn copies of the Koran last year and who led a campaign against gay Gainesville Mayor Craig Lowe, is going on the road throughout the United States. Jones will be the headliner on the Stand Up America tour, which will condemn Islam, homosexuality, and abortion. The United Kingdom recently banned him from entering.
In Fort Wayne, Indiana, a former mayor's name has been removed from consideration for naming a new building out of concern that it might start too many jokes. The city started an online vote, and Mayor Harry Balls became the runaway hit. However, officials said that his name is an easy target for jokes, and it's been taken off the list.
In Pennsylvania, Harrisburg Mayor Linda Thompson's now former press secretary, Chuck Arno, has accused Thompson of homophobia after he recently quit. Thompson has not denied Arno's claims that she referred to Harrisburg's openly gay comptroller, Dan Miller, as that homosexual, evil little man. Miller has called Thompson mentally unstable. Thompson is now seeking her fourth spokesperson in her 13 months in office.
In New York, people attended a tribute to slain Ugandan activist David Kato. The vigil started near the United Nations building and moved just outside a Ugandan mission. Attendees stated their feelings and urged that Kato's killer be brought to justice.
In Massachusetts, Mitchell Reich has become the first openly gay president of the publication, the Harvard Law Review. The 125th president of the review, Reich, a second-year student, said that his sexual orientation was never an issue.
In Washington, D.C., Mayor Vincent Gray appointed veteran public health and AIDS physician Gregory Pappas as director of the city's HIV, AIDS, hepatitis, sexually transmitted disease, and tuberculosis administration. The openly gay Pappas has held various AIDS and public health-related positions over the past 25 years, including a post as advisor to the U.S. Surgeon General David Satcher during the Clinton administration.
In world news, Manuel Neuer, a soccer player in Germany, said that he would love for gay athletes to come out of the closet. Neuer, a 24-year-old goalie who helped Germany finish third in last year's World Cup, said that fans worry more about playing ability than sexuality.
In Thailand, a new airline is hiring so-called ladyboys as flight attendants while trying to carve a unique identity. Ladyboys is the name given to transgender and transsexual individuals, and they have increasing visibility throughout the country. More than 100 ladyboys applied for positions, with 4 being accepted, along with 19 biological females and 7 biological males.
Silvano Vicenti, who heads Italy's National Historic Commission, feels that Leonardo da Vinci muse, the Mona Lisa, was really a man. Some have thought that the Mona Lisa was a portrait of a merchant's wife. However, Vicenti said that the painting subject's real name was Gian Giacomo Capriotti, known as Salai. Capriotti was da Vinci's young male assistant and, said Vicenti, his lover as well.
Derek Rockliffe, the first openly gay bishop from the Church of England, has died at the age of 89. Rockliffe revealed his sexual orientation in 1995 when he was honorary bishop in Ripon and Leeds Diocese. He was dismissed in 1996 for conducting blessings of gay and lesbian couples.
Israeli officials are planning to expel Thomas Schmidt, the 27-year-old German partner of a man who was killed at a gay community center in Tel Aviv. Schmidt was registering as the partner of Nir Katz, who was killed in 2009 during a gunman's rampage. Pro-gay activists and an Israeli legislator have asked the country's interior minister to allow Schmidt to stay.
In Bahrain, authorities arrested 127 people, mostly gay men from the Gulf countries, after raiding a party that was alleged to be a same-sex wedding. The attendees were at an event in a sports hall in Heed, a conservative village. Responding to a complaint, an undercover agent attended, where he allegedly saw dozens of crossdressers. Homosexuality is illegal in Bahrain.
In entertainment news, Focus Features has acquired rights to the contemporary drama Pariah, a debut feature from writer-director Dee Rees. The movie focuses on 17-year-old Alike, who learns to embrace her identity as a lesbian. Pariah, which had its world premiere at this year's 2011 Sundance Film Festival, counts Spike Lee among its executive producers.
HRC has called on NBC to apologize after an anti-transgender skit aired on Saturday Night Live. The skit, titled Estro Max, served to mock transgender people, minimizing the challenges they face. The skit happened just weeks after the show used the term son-daughter to refer to Cher's transgender son, Chaz Bono.
Emmy Award-winning actor Leslie Jordan will host the Hookies, the 5th Annual International Escort Awards, on March 18th at Manhattan's Roseland Ballroom. The show celebrates the best in the male escort industry, with awards including Best Newcomer, Best Daddy, and the night's top prize, Mr. International Escort 2010. The Hookies is the official opening event for the Black Party Expo weekend.
None Such Records will release Katie Lang and the Sis Boom Bang Sing It Loud CD on April 12th. It is the award-winning singer-songwriter's first record made entirely with a band of her own since the pair of albums with the Reclines that launched her career more than 20 years ago. Sing It Loud is Lang's first studio album since 2008 Watershed, which debuted in the top 10 of the Billboard 200.
Sex and the City actress Cynthia Nixon and her partner, Christine Marinoni, are the proud parents of a boy. Marinoni gave birth to Max Ellington Nixon Marinoni February 7th. Nixon, 44, has 2 children from her previous relationship with Danny Moses, in addition to Max.
Out gay Desperate Housewives creator Mark Cherry is promoting his next ABC pilot, Hallelujah, as glee for conservative Republicans. Cherry described the show as a cross between Touched by an Angel and Dallas, with a generous helping of gospel music. He said that he was inspired by the holiday classic The Bishop's Wife, in which an angel, played by Cary Grant, visits a minister's family.
Lindsay Lohan has pled not guilty to a charge of grand theft, and it's alleged that she stole a necklace from a Venice, California jewelry store. Lohan's bond was set at $20,000. She will return to court on February 23rd.
GLAAD will honor out singer Ricky Martin and Emmy and Tony Award-winning actress-singer Kristen Chenoweth at the 22nd Annual GLAAD Media Awards. Martin will receive the Vito Russo Award. Chenoweth will receive the Vanguard Award. The GLAAD Media Awards will also celebrate GLAAD's 25th anniversary year, looking back at a quarter century of work to build acceptance and advance equality through LGBT images in the media.
And screenwriter-director Paul Haggis of Crash broke away from Scientology because of its anti-gay stance. Haggis told The New Yorker, "I was in a cult for 34 years. Everyone else could see it. I don't know why I couldn't." He enjoyed the feeling of camaraderie, but started experiencing doubts after a San Diego staff member signed the church's name to a petition supporting Proposition 8, California's initiative that bans marriage equality. In addition, one of Haggis's children was shunned because she is gay. Because of her orientation, she was tagged as wicked. And that's the weekend news brought to you by Windy City Times.
Let's go to the movies anyway and see.
I'm Richard Knight Jr. Here's your Night at the Movies Mega Minute. Kaboom! Marks the return to cinemas after a three-year hiatus of out writer-director Greg Araki. For Araki, who broke through as one of the leading lights of the new queer cinema movement 20 years ago, the youth-centered Kaboom is both a return to roots and to form. Using his own college experiences as a film major, Araki crafts a sex comedy that spins off into deeper and deeper territory that's delightfully dark, playful, and naturally queer as hell. Smith, played by Thomas Decker, Araki's 18 going on 19 version of his younger self, with his permanent 5 o'clock shadow and deathly pallor, is a film studies major who never picks up a camera or goes to class. Instead, he's focused on getting laid as often as possible. In particular, he's fixated on his new roommate, Thor, played by Chris Dilka, a quintessential blonde surfer dude who struts around naked, boffs a series of female bed partners, and tries out a bit of self-fellatio in front of Smith without embarrassment in one of the film's most hilarious scenes. "I'm undeclared," Smith answers to an unfazed Thor, to his query about whether he's gay or not. But then nothing sexually fazes any of the pretty young things inhabiting Smith's freewheeling world. Certainly not Stella, played by Haley Bennett, Smith's best gal pal, an acid-tongued dyke and a junior league Eve Arden, who adroitly tosses off one zinger after another. The gorgeous Lorelai, played by Roseanne Mosqueda, unfortunately doesn't get Stella's dry humor and doesn't take the hint when Stella wants to break up. Something to do with Lorelai's uncanny witchcraft abilities and stalker tendencies. Smith himself picks up a male hottie on the beach, jumps into a tryst with the Aussie accented London, played by Juno Temple, and finds plenty of time to pleasure himself in between. London, a lively little number, is as avid sexually as her new lover, and her birthday present for Smith is the stuff that wet dreams are made of. Alas, though, the sex lives of these beauties are in spectacular overdrive as they drift through school, troubles afoot. Did Smith, while tripping on drug-laced sugar cookies, really witness the murder of a pretty red-haired lass by a group of men wearing animal masks? Or did he just get a bad dose? Are his nightmares really coming true about the end of the world? What do those threatening emails mean? There's a lot more in this paranoid comedic thriller. As the sexual romping proceeds, Araki intertwines an array of mystery and paranoid thriller elements, and the result, part screwball comedy, part David Lynch, and a whole lot of sexy times, is a lovely melange. It's easy to tag the energetic, unapologetic Kaboom, an extension of Araki's famed teenage apocalyptic trilogy, which were The Living End, Doom Generation Nowhere, for those familiar with his filmmaking renegade, and a great starting point for those just arriving at the party. I'm Richard Knight Jr., and that's your Night at the Movies Mega Minute.
Hey, this is Jennifer Hudson, and you listen to the Windy City Clearcast.
Culture Club. Culture Club. Culture Club. Theater.
Music.
Dance.
Art.
Performance.
Provocative.
Hilarious.
Exciting.
Queer.
Innovative.
Campy.
Edgy.
Original.
Get some culture in your life.
Join the club.
For the week of February 14th, 2011, you are in Chicago's Culture Club. Lifeline Theater continues its 28th anniversary season of unforgettable books brought to life with a world premiere adaptation of The Moonstone, the legendary mystery by Wilkie Collins. The Moonstone runs Thursday through Sunday through March 27th. More at lifelinetheater.com.
Goodman Theater presents the Chicago premiere of Mary. At the height of AIDS hysteria in 1983, college student David invites his boyfriend home to his parents' house in Maryland, where nothing has changed since the 1800s, including the slave quarters. Outrageous, ruthless, explosive, and combined with exhilarating wit, Thomas Bradshaw's Mary will leave you speechless, says the New York Times. Playing now through March 6th, visit goodmantheater.org for tickets.
Sergio Rivera Dance Theater presents Jubilation, a spectacular live music, art, and dance performance featuring Reginald R. Robinson and set to the sounds of Miles Davis. One night only, February 19th at 8 p.m. at the Athenaeum Theater, 2936 North Southport Avenue. Order your tickets today at Ticketmaster.com. Sergio Rivera Dance Theater, music you want to hear and dance you can understand. For more, visit SergioRivera.org. And for more Culture Club, visit WindyCityTimes.com.
Anyone out there? Bueller? Bueller? Post a comment at WindyCityQueerCast.com. Mitchell, you were spending some time in Louisville. You went south, so to speak.
Yeah. I mean, there's a little debate going on, you know, about whether or not it's a southern city or a midwestern city.
Yeah. Do you feel like have you spent enough time in the south to know if you feel it's a southern city or a midwestern city?
I've not spent enough time in the south, but I've spent enough time in the Midwest to know that it's a southern city.
Yeah. And what are the giveaway clues?
Some of the giveaway clues are, there's certainly a kindness, or at least the attempt at kindness, right? Like people always fault New Englanders for being brusque. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it's not real. It's just the sort of way that we are. You know. Mm-hmm. In the same way that, you know, Southerners sort of behave in this way that's very kind. They may be thinking something very cruel, but they talk, you know what I'm saying?
So yes, I do.
There's a behavior.
Mm-hmm.
Also, this was the funniest show. The show I did in Louisville was at the Actors Theater, and it was a Second City show from here, but designed specifically about Louisville, you know. Writers went down there, and they researched the town and wrote sketches about the city. And the sketch that killed every time was the way in which people in Louisville respond to snow.
Uh-huh.
Which means you know you're in a southern city, right? Because it snows in Louisville.
Yes.
And it's cold in Louisville.
Well, this has been a very unusual year because my family's in Tennessee just below you, and you know, we had snow on Christmas Day, and we've had weird snow and weather this year with all these weird winter storms. So it's maybe a little colder and a little more snowy than it's usually been of late.
Yeah, absolutely. And they're talking about it, but they talk about it in these apocalyptic terms.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, and it's literally, and I kid you not, because I was there, I watched this. Our sketch is like a sort of a news, like breaking news. There's a storm coming. Please try not to panic. It may be biblical in proportions.
Right.
We may be getting 2 to 3 inches of snow.
Right.
And so people, the audience would lose their minds, you know, because they would go like to somebody, two reporters in the field, you know, interviewing people at the local supermarket and, you know, local report about how, and people would lose their minds.
Right.
And what's so funny when, you know, knowing that like Chicago's getting like 2 feet of snow.
Right.
Well, I grew up in New England where we would regularly get 2 or 3 feet of snow. And these people, I mean, I kid, and at first I thought our sketch was exaggerated until we were getting some snow in Louisville, and I was watching the local news to see if I could get a perspective, and they might as well have been doing our sketch.
Oh, right.
I mean, literally interviewing people at the local supermarket about how they were going to deal with the impending snowfall. Like, it's, and I kid you not, it's 2 to 3 inches tops that
right.
will melt in a day.
Right, right, right. No, I know. I mean, you know, schools close at the threat of snow.
Oh, yeah. Schools close days in advance. Schools close.
Yeah.
This is true. Schools, they close schools. Actually, it's kind of a controversy there right now because they feel like maybe they sort of did it without really any need to. Like, a snowstorm's coming. Snowstorm meaning 2 to 3 inches. And they would close school days in advance.
Right.
It's crazy. So that was hilarious. And, you know, because I'm working at Actors Theater, I get to meet all these cool people who live there.
Yep.
And it was fun because I met some of the, you know, the gay people who work at the theater. Wait, there's gay people at a theater? No way.
Yes.
And,
in Kentucky?
I meet more gay people at the Actors of Louisville than I do in the Chicago theater community. I mean,
wow. Yeah, it's pretty gay down south. That's all I can say. It's pretty gay.
Well, it's interesting. It's interesting because, you know, Louisville is a very liberal.
Yes.
Not very liberal, but it's a little bastion of it's a little bastion of blue in a red world.
It
you know
absolutely
what I mean?
Is, and it's very artistic. I mean, it's the culture. Actually, you know, what's interesting is Kentucky in general actually has an amazing artistic life. But Louisville is definitely the hub of it all.
People go to the theater. I mean, it was amazing because
yes.
I was at the Actors Theater a year earlier doing a completely different show for a completely different theater company, another Chicago company that went down there. And I would literally be getting a cup of coffee or ordering a Maker's Mark Old Fashioned on the Rocks at
yes.
the Seelbach Hotel. And, well, you know, when in Rome. And,
yes.
And people would recognize me from the show that I did like a year and a half ago.
Mm.
I mean, it was, people go to the theater.
Yeah.
But I also got to go to some of the like Louisville gay bars.
Mm-hmm.
Because there was, luckily there was actually some gay people in my cast, which was nice.
So there were gay people in your cast and then there were gay people at Actors Theater. Were they people local to Actors Theater or were they actors brought in to work with their company from elsewhere?
My whole cast. Is from Chicago, and there's
right.
a gay actor, and then a musical director is gay as well. And
Theater of Louisville, and are
then Actors Theater,
local?
If they're the people who work there for the theater full time, you know,
gotcha.
Or
yeah.
or they were the they have an amazing apprentice program
yes.
there where they have all these apprentices, and so we would go, you know, my friend John, who's in the cast, is this brilliant Chicago improviser here in town. He does Baby Wants Candy, and he's an amazing group called 123 Fag. If you've never seen it in Chicago,
mm-hmm.
go see 123 Fag. They're the most brilliant improvisers. Anyway, so John and I, we go to this bar called Triangles, T-R-Y, Angles. Exactly. And John called it a shame bar. Like,
oh,
it's one
no.
of those bars. Like one of those bars in the 1950s that you would actually never know it was there if somebody didn't tell you, because the windows are dark and there's nothing marking it and there's no gay flag outside. Like,
and you kind
like,
of walk in a side entrance or something?
No, you walk in on the street, but somebody would have to tell you that A, it was there, and B, it was a gay bar.
Yeah.
And once you walk in, it looks like a, you know, sort of a typical sort of dive bar, and people are very nice. And then there's
those are
sort
some
of
the best.
Room.
Like, I came out in those bars, you know. Like, those are the bars
the
I came
ever,
out in.
The first gay bar I opened was in Providence, Rhode Island. It was called the No Name, but only because there was no name. It wasn't like officially called the No Name. It
yeah.
just had no name.
Yeah.
And you had to be told where it was.
We call those the No Name, just to make it sound a
yeah,
little...
Yeah, No Name, yeah, so that it's like a Japanese you.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So Triangles is like this, you know, like a typical small town. You know, there's a jukebox and there's a pool table, but there was a side room for the saddest strippers ever. You know, like the two male strippers in Louisville, but occasionally there'd be a buzz. Triangles would be a buzz because guess what? The strippers from Ohio are coming in. Oh, my God. I mean, you just can't get better than this. It was genius.
New and, Naked you know, Boys.
And, you know, I'm from people who listen to this podcast know I am not a prude in any way, shape, or form. But I am so uncomfortable around strippers of any variety.
Really?
I can't do it. I get very uncomfortable. I get very uncomfortable because I feel like it just makes me uncomfortable. It's a little bit like I know that Uncle Lou touched you in your no-no place, and now you're stripping, and I can't deal with it, and I want to ask you about it. And I mean, not that it's true of all strippers, God bless, I don't mean that. But I can't help but think some story of, like, how did you end up here in a thong rubbing against some toothless old man who's slipping money on your dick? I mean, I can't. Mm-hmm. I can't focus.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it makes me wildly uncomfortable.
But so you can watch porn, like, in a bar. Like when the porn is on the jackhammer.
No, I look away. I will look away. Okay. I do not watch the porn. I will absolutely not. And in fact, I very much don't like to go to bars where they're showing porn in the bar.
Okay.
It actually makes that also makes me uncomfortable. Only like I said, not because I'm a prude or I mean, part of me is even an exhibitionist. It's just that like I don't want to deal with other people's weirdness about it.
Right. I'm with you.
Yeah. So there was triangles, and then there was this other place, oh my God, Amy, called Connections.
Uh-huh.
Connections is literally like, you don't really know where you're going, and it looks like you're walking into, well, first of all, I kept calling it the bar that Time forgot, because it literally looks like it was designed in the 80s and then forgotten about.
Mm-hmm.
So there's all these smoky mirrors, right? Like,
yep.
Like smoky dark mirrors. But this place is enormous. It's like, it's the size of the merchandise mart. It's huge. There's room after room, and every time you think you've seen all the rooms, there's more rooms, and it's more 80s, and the dance floor is more ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
And it is packed. They have a drag show at Connections that I guess is legendary. In fact, Alex told me that she actually has performed down there a million years ago.
Oh, wow. Well, it's kind of a Southern phenomenon to have what I call the warehouse gay bar. And every town kind of has them. Yeah, every town has them in the South. Big city usually has them. And they can migrate, but usually it's off a pretty popular street, but it's back off behind the strip malls or the strip stores. And behind there will be like some sort of warehousey type spot. And they are like that. Like they were all established. Probably many of them were established in the late 80s and early 90s. And that's exactly what it sounds like you're describing, because Memphis, I don't know if Memphis still has one, but had one, you know. Atlanta had Backstreet, which was big bar. And it sounds like Louisville's is Connections. And let me tell you, the South has the South has the best drag that is unencumbered by anything except the pure essence of drag. And I can say that because RuPaul came from the South. And
well, you know what's so funny?
So many great drag queens.
Remember when drag queens used to have funny names, like brilliantly sort of clever, like, you know, Rhododendron or, you know, Eva Destruction, those things. Well, the drag that's going on now, it was killing me. I mean, it was killing me. They just pick names. They just make up a new name. There's no more any sort of, like, pun to it. Or anything, it's like Vanessa Denise Coleman or something like that, and you're like, is that a drag name, or is that just some lady's name?
Yeah.
And the drag show was so out of control and so well attended, and what was interesting, so many straight people, and I'm not talking just straight girls at a bachelorette party, I'm talking like straight couples hanging out. I mean, it's like, it's clearly the thing to do. The theater in which the drag shows happen within the warehouse that is Connections is bigger than the main stage at the Goodman. I mean, it's enormous.
Wow.
It was enormous. It was this balconies. I mean, it's insane.
Wow.
It was just, and also the wild thing is you literally, you know, I was there for a month, a little over a month. And so we went out, I don't know, we probably went out four or five times, John and Matthew and I, the other gays in the group, the other gays in the village, and all my saw the same people every time. So it's such a small town, and the small townness is what struck me. Right, it's so like this microcosm. because, you know, you go, you talk to someone and then you refer back to the person, you know, and they go, oh, he dated so-and-so and so-and-so and so-and-so and so. And then you talk to somebody else like, oh, he dated so-and-so and so-and-so and so-and-so and so. It's so insular and so incestuous. And in a weird way, I don't know, I'd like to hear what other people have to say about this too. In a lot of ways, gender stereotypes are more reinforced. I saw more sort of the butch femme mentality. I think maybe because it is a smaller town and it's more, it's not as liberal and it's people aren't as out and open. It's a lot of closeted behavior. I met a lot of people who, after I chatted with them, told me they were married. And I sort of feel like, you know, now we're in the big city, we're in Chicago, we're in New York, wherever, and people behave all sorts of ways. So gender norms and gender stereotypes have sort of floated to the wayside. Whereas when you go back into these small towns where it's more conservative, less accepted, it's interesting, my perception of it is that it goes back to like, I'm butch, I'm femme.
Mm-hmm.
For boys and girls.
Well, you know it's interesting because they're in community where... there is more traditional masculine, feminine roles being played in the heterosexual community.
And it is
praised. And so it becomes just a reflection within the subculture of those masculine and feminine roles.
I think it's really true.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, I think that that is something that will take a lot longer to dissipate for Southern towns. I really feel like there is a certain aspect of Southern life that is, there is a sexism and at the same time, there is a different concept of a strong woman in the South than there is in New England. I mean, it's just radically different things.
Recently I read a statistic while I was down there. I read the statistic in the New York Times, which it was really interesting because I did actually notice this, that there are the section of the country in which there are increasingly more gay families.
Is the South. Why? Because it's about traditional values, and part of a traditional value is having a family. So even if you're gay, you're going to have a family. You're going to follow along the forms and models and societal structure that you're used to, even if it happens to be two men or two women. Yes.
It was really fascinating, like going to like the local grocery store and, you know, there's, you know, this, you know, lesbian couple, there's the butch, there's the femme, and then there's their kids. And it was really interesting, and I saw it quite a bit. And then it was interesting to sort of see that reflected in an article in the New York Times. But the small kind of everybody knowing each other, the sort of incestuous sort of like everybody slept with everybody. There were only so many, you know, and the people who were like the quote unquote hot commodities, you know. And then, you know, feeling like you were fresh meat because other people didn't recognize you. It was quite intense actually and really fun. And then of course we went to this one gay bar. It's called Starbase Q. We thought it was going to be some sort of like Star Wars, Star Trek-y sort of space inspired. Yes. And it wasn't, but it was so funky and cool. It was more like a Chicago gay bar, and we were like, yes. And then we were told that it's probably closing in a month.
Yeah. Connections is swallowing up. The big fish will swallow up all the small ones. That's what I know, is that in a town like that, generally, unless it's like one of those little hole-in-the-wall dive bars, they all succumb to the one big mothership.
It's a mothership.
And the mothership ultimately, you know, has to be able to have enough variety for all. And be welcoming to all, and it sounds like they're doing that, you know, in
well, it was ridiculously fun. I mean, you know, just, and also there's something freeing about being in a city where nobody knows you, kind of.
Yep.
Although,
you get to reinvent yourself a little bit.
Well, also, like, you could act like an idiot. You know, I mean, we could, you know, show up, dance like idiots.
Yep.
Like, not even, like, dance well, like, deliberately, like, doing bits on the dance floor.
Yep.
Which I would never do in Chicago, right, because I'm too cool for school. But
well, and I love that you dance. That's the other thing about Southern big warehouse bars is there's a huge dance floor. And where in Chicago can you go dancing? Like,
I know, right?
All bars in Chicago, you sit and you talk, or you watch other people on television screens. But you, there are hardly any dance bars in Chicago. And that's a big, big part of the South, because part of the expression of being queer has to happen on the dance floor, because, it, you know, people are, I don't know, like you said, some people are married, people aren't out. And so a dance is a far more sexualized form. In Chicago, people just go back to their house and do whatever the hell they want to do.
Right. Or just walk down the street. I mean, you're right. It's a different mentality. It was,
it's fun to go dancing in those bars.
It was fun to go dancing. I hadn't gone dancing in a long time. And, I'm not sure somebody my age should actually go out dancing, but, you know, it was
stop
fun
it.
It was fun to do. And, as I already was, you know, going to some place where nobody knows you and you can act like an idiot. And then, of course, the reality is everywhere we went, somebody recognized us from the show.
Right.
Because on top of sort of loving the small town gay scene and all that stuff, the theater where we did our show is one of the great rep theaters, one of the great, you know, sort of regional theaters in the country, the Arts Theater of Louisville. And people go to this theater. We sold out pretty much every show, except when there was a, you know, a horrific snowstorm of 2 or 3 inches.
Yeah.
Sometimes people would come a couple of days later. But it was amazing to see how well attended it was and how well received it was. People go to the theater in that town. It was wild.
So I want to know, this is the $1 million question, and then we have to wrap up because, God, we just buzzed through a show faster than anybody I know.
Oh, my God.
We all want to know if you hooked up, if you had some good times in Louisville, Kentucky. Yep.
I did. I actually met somebody very cute. You know me, the younger ones like me, you know, if they're somewhere between, you know, 24 and 28,
yep,
they tend to find their way to my door.
Yeah, to your daddy door, to your uncle door.
To my Uncle Mitchell door.
Yep.
And, I did. And it was really fun. And he was really sweet. And I had a good time.
Good.
I had a really good time. Yeah. And then that was something that I sort of like hung with. But then there was one time that I did just hook up with this dude that I met. It's actually a really funny story. I'll just tell it really quickly. So, you know, we meet at this thing and he's working at the Marriott Hotel and he's sort of super sexy, whatever. And I got a free lobster out of it. That's a whole other story, but I got a free lobster out of it.
That's the
delicious
T-shirt, and that's the Connections
that's the
T-shirt.
Right. I went to Louisville and I got a free lobster. And anyway, so turns out this guy was on the major DL, right? Which, you know, if you're on the DL, you probably shouldn't be picking up people at the Marriott Hotel. But anyway, I was at this sort of big gala event. It was like the
it's
social.
It's so The Graduate. I kind of love it. It's so The Graduate.
So he and I were sort of getting into an elevator, and then my friends, who are totally cool and couldn't care less that I'm hooking up, get on the elevator. So I'm like, "Hi." So he freaks this guy and immediately pretends to be on his phone.
Uh-huh.
Right, like he's having a conversation, like he's not with me.
Yes.
And I thought, what weird behavior is that? You know what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. You literally, like, just a second ago, we're talking and we're clearly going to go on sex. He sees that I'm talking to, like, my friend. I'm like, "Hey, guys." And then he immediately pulls out his phone and pretends that he doesn't know me and is talking on a phone.
Mm.
There's no conversation. He's not really talking on the phone. Just the idea that somebody would see him with somebody, I was like, boy, oh boy, I do not live that life.
Yeah. I mean, that's the reality of small town as well. I mean, it's
I hear you.
There is a journey going on, and it is changing. It's just changing slowly. So it's good when influences from big cities come and show them confident gay examples, and
right,
television
living
is starting to have, you know, very proud and confident representations as well, and all of that impacts the smaller town and the southern city. So it's very exciting, and I like that you got a free lobster out of it. So
I did. I got a really yummy lobster, a couple of pounds. Yeah,
we a couple of pounds. And on that note, Mitchell, hopefully you'll be back on with us in the next couple of weeks because we want to get our fill of you before Hawaii, before we're saying aloha.
Aloha
to you. But everybody, I hope you have a good week. I know if you're in Chicago, you're thawing out, and I'm glad that you spent a little bit of your time thawing out with us. And Mitchell and I try to heat it up all during these wintry months. Mitchell probably better than me, but his life is far more exciting. And
I don't know about that.
On our next show, we're going to be talking about the church and the gays. That's right. We're going to be talking about the gay community and the church. And
it's lucky I'm not on that show.
We'll see. And but it's an interesting conversation. Where has the Christian church and the GLBT community, where is that debate and that conversation moving to as we head into this new decade? So it's a very exciting conversation with Reverend Eric Christensen, who I met at a talk back during the float production that I just did, talking about sexuality and spirituality. So I was really excited that he was willing to come on the show. And much, much more to come. So we hope you have a good week. Thanks for being with us. And we'll see you in the next show.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to another Windy City Queercast. Special thanks to our Queercast family, Kirk Williamson, newscaster, and Di Sturkey, production editor. I'm Amy Matheny, your host. Please comment on our shows at WindyCityQueercast.com and iTunes. The next Queercast is only days away, so don't miss it. Subscribe today. Windy City Queercast, queer and now.